Today we are talking, the theme is healing. And as always, I ask, why choose me for healing? Well, I guess I chose the date, and so I chose. And the day and the topic came to me. And of course, it's always very opportune when I have to study, because and I think this is one of the reasons I love staying in, you know, with sort of a teaching mode, because I truly have to study. I have to remember who I am. And so part of the healing process that I, you know, have been reading with our book, Love and Law, which are some of the unpublished works of Ernest Holmes, had to do a lot with how do I see healing? Is healing a picture, healing an image, healing a person? What is healing? And Ernest Holmes absolutely put my mind in the right perspective. And he started off, so this particular chapter was a chapter where they were interviewing Ernest about healing. And so the first question they asked was, why don't people get better results in their healing work? And I'm going to read part of Ernest's question. So before I even read, and we could be interactive a little bit, right? I asked myself that question before I actually heard the words, read the words. I said, why is it that I don't get healing or help or manifestations when I do and I think I'm doing my healing work? I'm going through my five-step treatment. I'm going through figuring out what is in my mind, but it's still not happening. And or it's still not happening in my very visual perception, right? And so I came up with my own idea of what it is. And so, of course, I went into a little bit of maybe self-criticism, maybe I'm not doing it right, maybe, you know. And so I had a lot of different questions, but different reasons. But Ernest said, the reason people do not get better results is that they do not understand that there is a principle which works independently of anybody, even of themselves. I didn't get it right. I went into a bigger, you know, broader picture of me. And here it is, he's saying, it's not about you, Gail. Right? It's not about anybody. It is about a principle that we are working with. So he literally went on to talk about that this principle is a truth in itself. The principle, and he talked about it as a law, because one of the questions is about, you know, with law. But the principle is the law of mind. Mind, he says, is subjective, right? And we, every one of us, including plants, trees, things, become objective through the subjectiveness. So the subjectiveness is all God, all mind, the one principle, the one truth, the one that has everything in it, all the power, all the presence, all the knowing. Everything that we are, we have gotten from our subjective, even our intelligence, right? However, as each person, and he spoke about this, as each child is born, a child is born in the subjective and stays, the baby stays in subjective until their brain begins to develop. And then as they are responding to conditions, then they become a lot more objective, just like every one of us, right? So the picture that I got is a wide area of maybe, let's say, just a wide area of cloth or something. And I see things just poking out from this, like little peaks poking downwards. And that is us coming from the subjective into our objective world. And we are, and Val keep me in check, you know, she kind of puts me back to where I need to be. So in other words, we all came from the one truth, which is God. And in order for us to be fully expressed as God, we have to become objectified, or we have to be in the present as each one of us, as a tree, as the carpet, as, right? So a big part of that is we do not have to prove that this principle is true. We just have to know it is true, right? And what he's saying is that a practitioner never has to think outside of himself. So as a practitioner, and we all are practitioners, right? We have to know what is the basic truth that I am dealing with here. So for example, if someone comes to me and say, please pray for this person, they are sick, right? If I choose to pray for the sickness or the illness, or pray for the manifestation of it, then I am sort of putting myself as taking ownership of what has to happen. So what Ernest is actually saying is, pray for the truth behind what that person is needing, is looking for. And so how does this truth come about? What is the truth that we should know about our condition, about our purpose, about what I want to experience in my own life? What is that truth? Well, we know that God is powerful, God is all-knowing, God is, put some words out there for me, omnipotent, God is joy, God is laughter, God, right? So all the qualities of God, and even values that we attach to God. So values such as, generosity, values kindness, values of motivation, values of, so we, from the bigger picture, we ourselves pull things from those, from the qualities of God, to finer tuning to how we want to see these show up in our lives. And a lot of the times we want to see them show up from the values that we hold dear to us and to our families. And that makes a big difference in our knowing. However, what Ernest is saying is, all of our treating and all of our mental work should be done from an impersonal standpoint. Truth demonstrates itself. We don't have to prove it to be true. A treatment takes place in yourself, in your own mind. And a practitioner never has to think outside of himself. it is not necessary for us to entertain in our thoughts that we have to treat anything for anyone that is outside ourselves. Well, how does that make sense to me? To me, that says, if I am treating a condition, I am seeing the truth behind the condition. Because remember, a lot of those little peaks that I saw are objective and are people and conditions, right? The bigger picture is there is a truth behind all of that. There is a knowing, there is power, there is, you know, whatever is needed is already there. So how do I pray from a space within myself? The within myself is the acknowledgement that behind this illness, what does this person want? This person wants health, right? This person wants wholeness. This person wants healing. Well, what did healing look like before it became something to be healed? Right? What did health look like before health went down south? Before health became objectified in other conditions? What did wealth look like before we even envisioned poverty? Or, you know, so we look at the truth behind all of the existing conditions. And the truth is, there is only health, the only healing, there is only wealth, there is everything that we need is already there. So what's blocking it, right? So so there is another question that was asked: what is meant by divine principle, right? So in an attempt to explain the one mind, the subjective mind, Ernest says, divine principle means that we are part of and surrounded by an infinite mind, which is only the actor, which is the only actor. Nothing moves but mind. It is as though every one of us were in one common mind and brought down to a point of personified consciousness. So that's where I kind of got my little image from, right? It's as though we all started in the one mind, but we came down to be conscious in a very objective way. There is one common mind at the root of everyone's personality. There is one common mind in this universe. But because we have separate, and because our brains have developed and we've gotten into our own intellectual minds, that does not change the fact that behind it all is the subjectivity, is the oneness of the universe, and we should be able to use it, right? So even though it looks like we are separated, even though it looks like we are objectified individually, expressing as God, as we talk about, it does not change the fact that we are part of and one of the whole. We may not be the entire whole, but just like the just like the ocean, right? If we take a cup of water from the ocean, right, that cup of water has everything this huge ocean has. All right? So that's sort of analogous to us. We are expressing in this now time, in this moment, as part of that huge, extensive, subjective God, as part of God. And if we are part of God, then we have the blueprint to make everything in our lives work, right? easier said than done coming from Gail's perspective, but I'm learning and I'm growing and I'm feeling better and better. You know, there were times when I would be truly doubting Thomas. It's like, this does not work, right? And I think part of part of the reading, Ernest says, it's not about you thinking whether it works or not. It's about your consciousness, right? Nothing needs to work. It just needs to be unfolded. It needs to be revealed, right? And this is where I personally, and a lot of us, take on personal responsibility to make things work, right? Please heal me. Sure, I can pray for you. But in praying for you, I am praying from within, from the truth that I know that everything is already whole. And I am praying that that wholeness is revealed through the body, right? And so when I come from a space of praying from within and praying from my knowing, that takes away any responsibility that I have to make somebody whole, all right? Obviously, they have a responsibility as well. However, just knowing that I know the truth is what I can put out there, all right? So one of the things that Ernest talked about is that not only are we human beings able to use this one mind, animals use it, right? Plants use it, vegetables use it, and they use it with such grace. They use it, we plant the seed, or the seed drops from another plant or from a tree, and there is the soil, that universal soil, right? There is the rain, there is the air, and voila, with ease, we have our vegetables, we have trees, we have even the animals. They instinctively, as they are born, they're instinctively knowing, okay, I need to get up really fast, right? I have to know how to move, how to survive. A baby is different, and that's where he talked about the difference with the instincts of a baby and the instincts of an animal. The animal's instincts are so much more intense. However, the baby grows up and our intellect way surpasses animals' intellect. Right? So it's all about using the oneness, the one mind. We are rooted in the one soil and the one air. He talked about diseases, and he said every disease that appears in the body must come up through mind into that body. When that life principle which you are deserts your body and your mind deserts your body and your body remains what you call a corpse, then your body is no longer sick. So that while you let go of yourself, you see that the body gets sick. So to me, let me just finish reading this.
Can you actually repeat that?
I will. So let me read this over again. I promise wasn't to go here, but I don't know why I went here. So, because it's one of my little things that gives me a little bit of heart stuff. All right. So every disease that appears in the body must come up through mind, the one mind, into that body, obviously. Because, right, when that life principle which you are deserts your body and your body remains what you call a corpse, then your body no longer gets sick, so that while you let go of yourself, you see that the body gets sick. It could not get sick unless there is an intelligence to recognize the trouble. So I don't know what to make of that. And I wouldn't go there right now, but it is something that Ernest Holmes feels very, very comfortable about. You know, he even talked about consider a contagious disease. It is physically contagious between living people, but it is not contagious between dead people. We must remember that there is just one subjective mind in the universe. This is a point people do not get. They cannot seem to see how it is that they can treat a person without touching. If there is but one subjective mind in the universe, it can be nothing but receptive, neutral, impersonal, creative, and as you impress upon it a certain thought, it then becomes the actor. So I guess he taught, he took the fact that if there isn't that life force within us to have the intelligence to know that we are sick or we are needing help or whatever, then we couldn't know that we were. So it's always the subjective that makes things happen, that becomes the actors in our lives. All right, so another question that was asked was, what is law? Because he did talk about subjective mind as law. And he said, law is law. It is impersonal. When you understand that statement in its truest sense, you will see there is nothing to oppose you. So, if you look at any of the laws, I guess, the law of gravity, you can use it freely to your advantage or to your disadvantage, right? And I guess that's the same type of thing that causes us to, to recognize that if law is law, then how is it that I'm having such a hard time recognizing that everything that God is available to me? Ernest says it's the same law. It's the one actor. If the law of gravity, if I stand on a one-story building and I want to jump, I am going to jump. It's going to take me there. Why is it I cannot trust the law of mind, the law of spirit? Why can't I trust God to truly bring everything into existence for me, knowing that it is impersonal? Knowing that I don't have to do anything to make it happen. I and God are one. Anything outside of me then makes it a duality kind of situation. It's like it's God and it's me. And it's like it's up to me to make it happen. When I could truly release and let go. And there lies the difficulty of why it is that I don't feel that I can let go and let things happen or make things happen. So with that said, there are other factors that have come into play with us feeling the way we are feeling. And one of those factors is what Ernest called race factor, or the race suggestion. And I'll explain what race suggestion is. It is a great deal more than people think it is. It means that in this great race consciousness of mind, this great psychic life is in which we were immersed, there is a thought form and a thought image and mental equivalence of everything that has happened since the race began, which has not been neutralized by direct opposite forces. So in life, nothing goes away. There is nothing that we are experiencing that has not happened before, right? And in terms of race consciousness, there is always what he called a mental equivalent. So something happened earlier on, and a mental equivalent was formed. And that mental equivalent is still around. So when people tell us, you know, make sure you put on shoes before you go out because you would catch a cold. Somebody caught a cold when they thought they didn't put shoes on, and they send that out, that equivalence into the atmosphere. So now they are living to tell us that happens. You will catch a cold. Or another thing might be what? What's another race suggestion we deal with regularly?
There's things to worry about, right?
There are things to worry about. I, as a baby, grew up and came in broad and free, born free, right? I was born free, and everything happened, and I was just the most perfect person until I started saying no. And then they called it the terrible twos.
Yeah.
And they called it other things. And then they started restructuring us, right? So those are the race consciousness thoughts of our parents. Yes, they say it's because they want us to be social. They want us to fit into society. And you cannot make yourself conspicuous in a group of people because you're going to stand out. That behavior is not acceptable because ... right? So as we go through life, we are embracing other people's mental equivalents. Sometimes our parents are embracing the mental equivalent of their parents and their grandparents, and they keep bringing it through. And so when we are in this world right here, right now, we are bombarded with tons of it. Yes, you got to worry about that because this happened and because this happened, right? And so we are bogged down with it. And when we become bogged down, when we become worried, what happens, right? We have a chain reaction going on. Not only are we worried, but now we can't focus. Not only can we focus, but our brain not thinking because it's so cloudy, because everything else that is happening, our thoughts are going 100 miles an hour, right? Not only are we thinking about all that stuff, no, we can't eat because we have too much to worry about. And because we can't eat, we got tons of gastric gases going on inside of us. And because of that, we start getting stomach ulcers, one thing after the other, right? And so the key to this is if we could recognize the clarity of what race thought is, of what are the suggestions? What is the, and this is not the right word, but you will tell me, Val. Milieu? Which is a lot of things going on, right? Okay, what's the milieu we are in? What kind of soup is it we are dancing around or swimming around in? And that's the problem. That is a big problem of humankind, right? Is that we are failing to recognize that our healing comes from a bigger, wider, clearer, more very crispy space than what other people are encouraging or suggesting for us. But because we had to go through childhood and we had to listen to adults, or we had to go through the torture and the pain of teenagers and, you know, all the stuff that happens throughout that time, we tend to shrink and we lack and we make ourselves small and forget our hugeness, our bigness, our life, right? So Ernest is saying that that disease comes 3/4 from race suggestion. Positive-minded, sharply individualized people throw off diseases. It is those who are not afraid who truly are usually never sick. And he's a bold guy too, right? He has to have a lot of faith in himself and his knowing for him to say 3/4 of the world is sick because of what we are swimming around in. And if we put it to the test, right, if we ask for something, the universe will always answer, right? So how do we ask, or what frame of mind are we asking in? Are we asking from a fearful space? Are we asking from a space of what we have seen happened to others and now we don't want that, we want something else? Just the fact that we are saying that we don't want that is already race suggestion. It's already saying, I have a blueprint for that. Mm-hmm. And how am I going to erase that blueprint and have a different blueprint for what I truly want, uninhibited by the people around me who say they love and support me, uninhibited by the suggestions that are already milling around in this world, right? So he said, do not treat the patient as a sick body. If you do, you are treating the body, all right? We don't treat the body because the body is effect and not the cause. So what's the cause? Bodies and conditions never move, but they are moved upon. So what we are wanting to work, what we are wanting to see happen has to happen from a bigger, broader, wider perspective. It has to be acted upon in order to come true. So there are degrees to which the mind can become adjusted to what we want in this universe. We live subject to the laws of disease and poverty until we ourselves free ourselves from it. If you express any disease, you are expressing an affirmation of life along which you have allowed it to flow, all right? And a lot of the times, this is not conscious. We got to remember that. We are experiencing things because we are swimming along with everybody else who have these, let's say, worry thoughts. And as much as we are trying to ward off these thoughts, sometimes they become way too tiring. It's hard of a job. It takes too much time and personal dedication to get things the way I want it. And we give up sometimes, right? But if we continue to, as he said, if you express any disease, you are expressing an affirmation of life along which you have allowed it to flow. So a lot of the times we do wittingly or unwittingly bring things into our lives, but now we have to have a clearer way of working with that. So how do we start clearing up our consciousness, right? What is it that we need to do in order to move forward? All right, and I'm going to kind of start to close off with this. So Ernest talks about treatment, right? So in our philosophy, treatment is now a 5-step process. However, it was like he had mentioned, there were three steps of treatment. Well, not three steps, three different types of treatments. He talked about the Christian Science method, which was affirmations and denials, right? Then he talked about the Divine Science one, which was, it took out all the denials and just stayed on affirmations. And then he talked about healing by meditation, which he talked about, which the practitioner takes one thought and holds it until he or she gets a clear realization and vision of the truth, of the truth is experienced, right? So what he's actually saying, we meditate on the truth and think until we see the truth. There is nothing but truth, nothing to deny or oppose. So what he's actually saying, these three things are still yet focused on physical forms. We are affirming or denying these forms. We are holding, right? And if we are holding a form, then we are definitely putting ourselves out of our realm of knowing the truth. So when you are treating a patient, he says, you should have no personal responsibility for the recovery of that person. You are not healing the patient. You are setting out in an impersonal, receptive mind certain statements which this one mind is going to carry into effect through that patient. All right? So the practitioner must have a clear vision in order to heal, but the mind knows what has to be healed. Right? We could hear, please heal me, I am going through whatever. And as a practitioner, we should ask no other questions. We should say, sure. Right? Because the minute you start saying, what's going on? What needs to be healed? We enter a suggestion again. And we are literally objectifying the thing as cause. This is what is happening, right? As opposed to knowing that, or not knowing, and trusting that God, the universe, the subjective mind, already knows what needs to be healed and will act on it. When we have our issues and we come up with solutions, problem solving, put things structured, how much of it, once we put things into place, how much of it would be our responsibility to see it happen? We don't know how it happens sometimes, but we just put things into place the way we know it best to be, and then we let it go, right? Let's talk about worry. If I know that I am worried right here, right now, and I want to be able to feel better about myself, am I going to carry that worry with me for as long as I have not felt better, right? Or as long as I need that healing? No. I take the worry and I use whatever coping skills I can use in the moment, and then I have to let it go. Because if I don't let it go, then the picture of worry becomes brighter and clearer. And what else do I see? More worry. More reasons to worry, right? How did that happen? I clearly knew that I was working with my worry, and right. So these are the things. We cannot take responsibility for our own healing. And that is where I really went kind of haywire with my thoughts. Because, yeah, if I know the truth and you present this to me, please heal this particular thing, I think I can take that thing, knowing the truth behind me, but no, it's really more convoluted than that. And we have to remember that. We have to remember there is an unseen force around us called race consciousness, or race suggestion that's going to hinder us from seeing the bright, brilliant truth that God is. So how do we move forward? We move forward by doing treatments, right? And treatment is seeing the entirety of what you want, see the truth behind what you want to be healed. So who God is, what is God in your estimation? God is all powerful. God is the source of all. God is health. God is purity. God is finances, wealth. God is everything that I know this universe to be is God, right? There is nothing that I need that is not right here, right now. God is omnipresent. And if God is omnipresent, God is here, God is in there, God is there in every moment. Just like the drops of water, the cup of water from the ocean, right? God, everywhere God is. And so in knowing that and seeing that basic truth, then if God is everywhere present and there is not a spot ever where God is not, then, who am I? Yeah. Am I excluded from everything that ever is? No. Right? So I now have to recognize, even though I don't feel the fullness of who God is in the moment, but can declare such truths, I could literally see me as a cup of water from the ocean that has all the God qualities in it. Because I was not taken from the ocean and separated. No, I was taken from the fullness of it. And the fullness of the ocean is analogous to the fullness of subjective mind, the fullness of the universe, the fullness of where all our blueprints for everything in our lives come from. And so sometimes I see me as that. Every once in a while I go into meditation and I see a bigger, bigger picture that I am fitted in into such wildness, which doesn't last very long, and then I'm back again. But I try to hold on to, I am a little bit of what God is, and I see myself in that cup. And so if I am that person, if God is in me, then I have every aspect of God within me. There is no spot where God is not, I know. And so we have to recognize that as we come forward, as we come back. I want us to, you know, Lorianne should be here pretty soon. And part of what I would like us to talk about is, we're going to just complete the prayer, complete the treatment. Well, let me just quickly finish that off, and then we'll just talk about how we could bring things in our lives when we come back. So seeing God for all God is, which is the first step, recognition, unification, is if God is all of this, then I am included because I am somebody, I am here, I am, right? And then we want to declare what we want from a space of purity. From that space that everything within me, God is. And so I am coming from a space of the law, impersonal. God, this is what I want, and I'm releasing that. And by thanksgiving, it's just a sense of gratitude that I am already experiencing it, right? Not gratitude because I'm waiting on it. Gratitude because in this moment, it already is here. But it just has to be revealed. And you're given gratitude for seeing the signs along the way where it could be revealed. And then the last one is release. And when we release, we are trusting the law of gravity. We are trusting the law of this. We are trusting the law that is going to come to us. All right? Sorry to keep us so long with this one, but we would talk. We'll convene in about 10 minutes, and I'm going to check in to see where Lorianne is. Okay. All right. Thank you all so much.